Welcome to Mulder Was Right.
Hi.
We're a podcast where we talk about conspiracies and alternative facts. My name is Brendan, and I am your host for today. I am joined by my co-hosts.
Anderson.
Curtis. Sakeev.
And Joe.
All right. So today, I have a pretty awesome topic for you guys. This is one of, like, the biggest mysteries in history at this point.
Oh, is it?
Yep.
Bigger than an episode of Scooby-Doo.
I was about to say, did the gang investigate this?
I think it came before Scooby-Doo, I think.
Yeah.
What was life like before that?
There weren't mysteries before that.
There were no mysteries.
Don't be fucking ridiculous, Brendan.
Anyway, so today we are going to be talking about the Dyatlov Pass incident.
Yes. Yes.
Anderson knows what I'm talking about.
I do. I'm going to shut up, though, so that these others don't spoil it for anybody.
Yep. But
I love this story.
All right.
This is wild.
This is a pretty crazy story. And this story takes place in the Soviet Union. So let's begin. On January 23rd, 1959, 10 graduates boarded a train headed towards the Ural Mountains in central Russia. The graduates planned to trek up the mountain and reach the Otorten Peak by early February. The trek consisted of 8 men and 2 women. And now I'm going to stumble through as I try and list all of the names of the hikers.
Fantastic.
They're
like
all
it.
Very long Russian names.
All right.
Yuri Nikolaevich. Nikolaevich. I think I know that one.
Nikolaevich.
Doroshenko. Lyudmila Alexandrovna Dubinya.
Oh yeah, I know them.
That was one person.
This one person.
Yes.
So that was 2 people so far.
What? So far, you've named 2 people.
2 people.
Yeah. 3 people. No. You named 4 people.
Nope.
This is 2 people.
Long Russian names.
Oh my god.
You're doing really good so far, though.
All right. Stick your finger up when you switch people.
So our viewers
actually,
can see.
Say, I am now moving on to a new human individual.
I am now moving on to a new human individual. Alexander Sergeyevich Kolotov. I am now moving on to another individual
like,
human.
This is like half the episode already.
We're 50 minutes into this, Brendan.
When will you start your topic?
Zinaida Elis. I don't know what that was.
Do you want us to try to read
real
this?
Quick, no. Real quick, just for our listeners, Joe looked over the tablet to try to figure out what the name was and then just recoiled in horror.
Yeah, nope.
Well, okay, there's that person.
Sure, Nick, we're not.
Hey,
we'll name
hey Brendan, do you know what I love? Numbers. Is there any way we can apply numbers to these people?
I guess there are a couple names that are actually important. Most of these aren't.
Oh,
I am going to talk about a couple of these names.
Write down their names.
No.
Write down a number corresponding.
No.
We're not doing that.
10 nope. little comrades.
Let me just talk about the important ones here, or people that who I will actually come back and talk about. There's Yuri Yefimovich Yudin. Yep,
Yuri.
And then there's Yuri Alexandrovich Chris.
There's two
Yuris. There's
2
Yuris. Krischenko.
Yuri Prime.
You thought this was going to be easy, didn't you?
If you guys weren't really listening,
yeah,
there's
the
actually
was named
3 Yuris.
So these were 2 new Yuris you just listed.
2 new Yuris.
Okay. I don't remember any of this, and I was listening.
and then finally, our final member is Igor Aleskovich.
Oh, fucking Igor.
Dyatlov.
I don't remember Igor.
Igor, Yuri,
his
and
name
Yuri.
Is Dyatlov.
His name is Dyatlov.
Yeah.
That's the name of the thing that we're doing now.
You're right.
Let's talk about Igor a lot.
Is he the main character?
Well.
Does he have the crazy hair?
I talk about him a little bit. The reason why, because the pass is named after the trek leader, Dyatlov, who.
The
trek leader. He's not really the protagonist.
He's the protagonist.
He could be considered the protagonist, but. I don't really.
He is the one chosen by the crystal.
But anyway, so there are these graduates, or most of them are graduates. Some of them are still students there. They're all roughly around the same age. They're all young in their early 30s or 20s. Sorry,
30s. Yeah,
early 20s. One of them is like 37. Like that's the oldest one.
Is that that guy?
no, that was
No, I mean like that guy, you know?
No, it wasn't Diet Love.
No, I'm saying like, you know, that guy who's always like 37 and hanging out with.
Well, he was the last person to join the trek. So he could have just, you know, forced his way in.
But was he also a student or was he?
Yeah, he was a student. He was studying for his master's in like mountaineering. Which is a thing that you can get a degree in.
I knew a guy who had a degree in adventuring. Anything's possible.
That sounds like a lie.
No, dude.
Interesting.
It's true.
That sounds awesome.
Anyway, so all of these guys have done large, dangerous, really cold treks before. They're all experienced in ski tours and mountain expeditions.
This is not amateur hour.
No. They've done a bunch.
Well, I just feel like that's clear. That's like something we should clarify before we get into more.
This is not amateur hour. These guys were
pro tour for ice climbing.
This is the big leagues.
This is the big leagues.
I mean, they're not really mountain climbing. They're like more doing ski treks. So they're like on skis. Okay.
It's extreme hiking.
Yeah, I mean,
basically.
That's tough. Hiking. And you know, it's through the snow. It's in the winter. You know?
Exactly.
Yeah. Hiking in the winter is, you know.
Hiking is in the mountains of Russia.
Yep.
Right. Were these all men? Or I can't remember.
It was 8 men and 2 women.
8 women and 2 women. Okay.
Yep. So most of them were graduates of Ural Polytechnical Institute. And this trek, at this time, was classified as a class 3, which is the highest class of its conditions. And the group kept a diary, throughout the entire expedition. So we're going to go day by day, starting their expedition.
Man, a group diary. That sounds like a clusterfuck.
They had 3 diaries on the trek and we've only been able to recover 2 of them. So this is like a culmination or this is like, we're really only reading from 1 diary.
Wait, you mean they didn't just make it home safely?
Good stories would go.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that they didn't make it home safely. They might have just left their diaries.
Oh, they lost their diaries.
Yeah, they lost their diaries.
Fucking Igor lost his diary.
Yeah.
Protagonist.
Anyway,
is a failure.
So January 24th, 1959, the group arrives in Sarov, mining town. When the group arrives, they feel very unwelcome. They came here by train. Mm. They weren't allowed into the train station. And when one of the men on the trek, Yuri, he begins to sing a song, sort of like mocking the policeman there. And the policeman grabs him and takes him away and like arrests him.
Sucks.
So fun times.
I'm sorry, did you say this was 1959?
1959.
Okay.
In Soviet Union.
In the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't sing at police officers.
You don't.
In the Soviet Union in 1959.
Here's a quote from the diary. It is perhaps the only train station where the songs are forbidden. Finally, everything is settled with the law. Yuri is then released and uncharged, and they move on to their next location. Right. So they take a truck to the next location. Actually, they take a bus. They take a bus to the next location on January 25th in Ivdel, which is the home to the Ivdelog Gulag. Since the year was 1959, good news is the Gulag was abolished circa 1956.
Hey,
so, Gulag is a Russian prison.
Concentration camp.
Like Russian, like work prison.
Yeah, work prison. Yeah, which was pretty common in these days, you know, because they had a super awesome dictator named Joseph Stalin, who would occasionally, very frequently, imprison people to these gulags.
For singing.
For singing.
He had no time for Stalin.
Fucking Yuri got off, like, lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yuri
yeah.
was like, good Jesus, I'm never singing again.
Yeah, I will take a vow of silence.
The group did not actually leave any records for this day, so nothing actually in the...
fun bus ride.
It was a fun bus ride. The reason why we know this stuff is because people have reported after the fact. January 26th, the group leaves Ivdel and hitchhikes a ride in a Gaz 63. If you don't know what that is, it's an old car. It's the quintessential tomato truck. So,
It's like a big, just like haul. It's a big like hauling truck for like goods.
Yeah, it's a big truck. It literally has like the wooden panels on the side.
Yeah.
And so it's really awesome when you're like up here in, you know, at the foothills of the Ural Mountains, where outside temperatures were negative 17 Celsius, which for us here who, you know, are American.
Very fucking cold.
1.4 Fahrenheit.
It's yeah, fucking cold.
Very cold.
1.4 degrees Fahrenheit.
1.4 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah. Yeah, just hop in the back of my truck. It'll be
well,
fine.
Yeah. I mean, like, it was no big deal. Like,
hey, wear your bathing suits. They're Russians.
Yeah.
Yeah,
balmy
they just,
summer for them.
They just hitched a ride, and here's a quote from their diary. While traveling, they sang songs, discussed various topics, including love, friendships, and the problems of the cure for cancer.
Man, I like how they bounce around.
Something that they were talking
nice
about.
Nice guys.
Pretty deep.
Nice kids.
Yeah.
You know, this sounds like a really fun trip. You
it
know,
does.
Aside from Yuri fucking around and getting arrested and that being
nothing
kind of annoying,
could possibly go wrong.
Like, so far, this sounds like nice.
Yeah, I mean,
like to do a trip.
I mean, he
like
was
this.
Released. He wasn't charged.
I'm surprised.
So it's like all good.
Yeah.
I'm
surprised they missed us singing again. They already been down that road like 2 days ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is in the back of a truck where it's really cold out.
The driver turns out to be an undercover cop.
Yep. Secret police.
You're under arrest.
No,
we're
singing.
Going to the gulag.
You thought the gulag was deactivated. It's all an elaborate ruse.
Deactivate
the gulag.
All right. Next day, January 27th, the group they make it to Vizhay, the next town over. And so the group leaves Vizhay on the 27th with a man whose name is very long.
Does he have like
can you try?
The first name that's easy?
Yeah, you got to
Nope.
You got to try.
Let's
I was,
do it.
Brendan,
I
you
was,
have to make
it. Hold on. I was only given one name. Like he's like Cher. He only has one name.
Okay.
So, Velikaevichus.
Velikaevichus.
You're doing really good so far.
This man is a Lithuanian, and he's a former convict. So, in the 1940s, it wasn't uncommon for you to get arrested for doing whatever. And then you were sentenced to being exiled in Siberia. So that wasn't a very that was a pretty common thing in Soviet Russia.
Soviet Russia.
Yeah, exiled for existing or pissing someone off.
So this guy lived exiled in Siberia.
It's really like a great prison system. You just send some, like, we should just send all our prisoners to Alaska. Like, and they just have to live in Alaska. And then
it's
we don't have
be
to
really
like,
freaking cold.
Do anything with them or feed them or anything. We're just like, go over there.
Yep. So there were a lot of
now keep in mind,
past
Curtis,
convicts.
There are people who live in Alaska.
Yeah, I know.
There are people who live in Siberia.
Not that many people.
People live everywhere.
They still do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for the most part.
But anyway, so they traveled by sled this time. Using the horse.
That sounds awesome.
Yes. They've done like all like common modes of transportation
come
at this time
train,
besides like an
bus,
airplane.
They're getting
they're
like
a group of
lower
adventure.
Quality each time. Train,
oh, yeah.
Bus, back of a truck, whoa. Now sleds led by a Lithuanian convict.
Yes. I mean, it sounds like they're having an average journey in like Soviet era Russia.
To like the store.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, the thing is that the further they get up the hills is it becomes more rural.
Yeah.
It becomes more uninhabitable.
Less people who want to
less
be
people.
There.
Yes. So, and they finally arrive at an abandoned gulag. So
we're two gulags into this story already.
Yes.
Really?
Yep.
Two more gulags than every other story.
That would make
had.
It a two log.
Hey-o.
Hey.
So
sometimes we
January.
Get those sitting on the toilet.
We call those a stack.
Yeah, you didn't think we'd make poop jokes, did you?
Yeah. No.
If you're excited for poop-based puns.
I didn't expect this.
All right. So the next day, January 28th, Yuri Yudin gets sick and departs from the trek. They all give him hugs. And they took a lot of pictures on the trek, too. So they had diaries and they had pictures.
Okay. Is this not the Yuri that got arrested?
This is not the Yuri that got arrested.
So he got sick. He's like, guys, I'm going home.
Yeah, he's yeah.
And
he's
he
sick.
Went back on the sled, back on the truck, back on the bus, back on the train.
I don't know how he made it back. It's not ever told to us. But
we know he made it back.
Yeah, he's fine. And the trek is very sad to see him go. We see a bunch of pictures of them hugging him, and they're super bummed. And this is the night where they actually believe that the that the trek actually begins.
Okay.
Because this is when they're actually out on their own using a tent and whatnot. So that's January 28th. January 29th is, I'm going to read you directly from their diary here. Second day of our trip, we made our way from Losvi River to River Ospai. We walked along a Mansi trail, Mansi being a native Siberian tribe in the Urals.
Okay.
They come back a little bit in the story. The weather is negative 13 Celsius. The wind is weak. We often find ice on the Losvi River. That is it. January 30th, 1959. The weather gets worse and worse, dropping lower. The group continues on their trek. Nothing really seems to be out of the ordinary. They take a lot of pictures. So they're all having a good time, just hiking up, talking about love and whatever young people talk about when they're really cold and hiking.
When they're hiking in 1 degree weather.
Most of the talk, fuck, it's cold out.
Yeah, right.
At the beginning of the trek, they do tell the group or tell their like club, because it's, I guess it's like a club function that they're like a doing.
Mountaineering
this with.
Club or
yeah,
something.
Mountaineering yeah. club. So they tell their mountaineering club what they're doing and when they're going. And so they do have an idea of when they are supposed to be expected back. Usually, they're thinking probably about February, maybe like 6 to 12 is what they're thinking.
Okay. Estimated return.
Estimated return. January 31st, they arose a little late, 10 a.m., and continue on. They continue on the Mansi Trail. The final line in their diary is, it is hard to imagine such comfort somewhere on the ridge with a piercing wind hundreds of kilometers away from human settlements.
Fun.
Yeah. And obviously this is translated, so I know it's not going to be perfect.
Yeah.
Because they're Russian. So now we get to February 1st, 1959. The group starts out fairly late and only make it about 2.5 miles before making camp. And this is all speculation at this point. They make camp only 10 miles away from the summit, which is very close to the summit of Dead Mountain, which is the name that the indigenous Mansi people gave it.
Cheerful.
Yep.
Great name.
Where are y'all vacationing? Dead Mountain.
Oh, cool. Right next by Skull Pass.
Yeah. Skull Pass. It's between Skull Pass and Exile Hill.
Murder Valley.
Yeah.
Murder Valley.
Oh, I went there last year.
Yeah. It's got nice. Murdered.
Don't joke about murder. I've been murdered once. It was not fun.
Right. So several weeks later, relatives of the group are getting worried because they haven't heard back from them.
Yeah.
So everything didn't go perfectly fine?
Unfortunately not.
Oh, yeah.
On February 26th, the search party sets out and locates their tent. The tent is snowed in. Now, nothing seems out of the ordinary. They still have all their gear in it and whatsoever. But after further inspection, they find large knife marks in the fabric of the tent. So that's kind of weird, right? Mm.
Yeah.
The weirder part is that the way the marks were made, you can tell that the knife marks were made from the inside of the tent.
That's what I was thinking. Ooh. It had to have been inside. They were probably trying to get out of the tent because of something.
So none of the bodies were there. They couldn't find anyone there.
So they successfully cut their way out of a tent.
Yeah.
Good for them.
A footprint trail leads away from the tent and down the mountains away, but then it stops further down the mountain.
Uh-huh.
So the search party follows the direction of where those footsteps would go, and they find the remnants of a campfire in a forest nearby. Now, these footprints don't look like footprints of somebody running away. They look like very calm footprints, people walking in orderly fashion.
Was it like one set or a group?
It was a group. The search party then locates the bodies of Yuri. Both of the Yuris still left on this trip.
All right.
Yuri Prime and Yuri Alpha.
Yep. So they find both of them. The bodies were severely underdressed for the climate, only wearing nightshirts, underpants, and socks. One of the hikers was burnt, and the weather estimated that night was negative 30 degrees Celsius, which is negative 22 like, Fahrenheit for us.
Yeah, you don't have to. Like, that's already burnt? Colder than
for
I can
us
imagine.
Backwards,
yeah.
Folks.
So like,
you said one
was
of
it
the bodies.
Frostburnt yeah. Yeah. Or like burnt?
Burnt, burnt. Like that's burnt, weird. Burnt from fire.
That's strange.
The tree nearby had branches broken up to 5 meters high.
So like 15 feet up the tree, branches were broken off.
Yep. It would take them 2 months to find the rest of the travelers.
Oh, shit.
Yep. Well, yeah, it's fucking winter.
The next three hikers were found differing distances from the tent. They were all also underdressed, but more dressed than the original hikers. Each of their bodies is found pointing towards the site of the tent. Each of these hikers were intoxicated at the time of their death.
Okay, so they did an autopsy.
Yeah, they did an autopsy. Some of the hikers had sustained minor injuries, but the official cause of death was hypothermia. The final four hikers are found at the bottom of a small hill covered by 3 meters of snow. The hikers were in the opposite direction of the tent. Three of the hikers had sustained fatal injuries, so not from frostbite. Hmm. One of them had a fractured skull, the other some cracked ribs, and they all suffered massive internal bleeding. The coroner describes these injuries as something similar to being from a car crash and something that is not inflictable by humans.
It was a Yeti.
So we had the two Yuris, then we had three hikers following that, and then this. You said this was the final three or final four hikers?
Final four.
Final four, okay.
So it was two Yuris, then then four.
So we had nine. So here's
so nine,
the last nine.
People. Nine total, which is, yeah.
Right. So 2 years,
one of them left.
Were found dead, one direction from the tent, just hypothermia dead, with branches broken off from the tree, 15
yes.
feet up.
Yes.
One of them was burned by fire. Then the other way from the tent, three more people dead from hypothermia. They were drunk when they died. And then more down that way, four people like
buried in
beat
the
fuck up.
Yes, one fractured skull, another cracked ribs, all suffering from massive internal bleeding. Two of the men here had suffered an injury of having gaping eye sockets, and one of the women was missing a tongue.
So their eyes were missing?
Yes. Yes, their eyes were missing.
Yeah, their eyes were gone, and one of them was missing a tongue.
They're just building a new person out of the parts.
And so the final hiker that was there, because only three of them died from fatal injuries. The final hiker had a broken nose and a deformed neck. But the official cause of death was hypothermia. After much investigation, after they found them, they found that three articles of clothing were found to be slightly radioactive. Yeah.
Okay.
That's
yeah, it gets weirder.
Weird.
And so
all I can do is make faces like
yeah.
Just
and so on May 28th, of the same year, 1959, so it's like 3 months after the initial thing, the official criminal case was closed, and the lead investigator leaves us this statement. The cause of death was an unknown compelling force, which the hikers were unable to overcome.
This is the vaguest phrase I've ever heard.
That's like saying it was something.
You could really end every cause of death that way. Yeah. Some shit happened.
Something happened.
But that is like a really mysterious way of putting it. An unknown compelling force.
That they could not overcome.
Like.
Yeah, it's weird. After the incident, the pass was named after their leader. The Dyatlov. I feel like I always want to say this like a pirate. The Dyatlov Pass.
Dyatlov Pass.
And it was closed to the public for 3 years following the investigation.
Jeez, can't blame them.
So
that's really sketchy. Finding like nine dead bodies, three of which had three. You said three articles of clothing had radioactive.
Yes.
Like three articles of clothing on each person, or like
Three collectively. Total. Three collectively.
Well, plus three of them were just straight up mutilated.
Yup.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is really sketchy.
One other thing. I hope I'm not jumping ahead, but I remember when I was looking into this a while ago, one of the big things that they stressed was that none of the injuries that the hikers had sustained looked like animals. Like nothing. There wasn't anything to indicate like scavenging or like bear attack. It was all like non-animal, non-human injuries.
Yep.
Well, all right.
Well, it could have been like some psycho who was like, I'm going to kill these people.
But no, like their injuries, like the mutilations, sure. But the injuries that killed those people, like you can't inflict that with a human being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The forces required are too much.
I mean, the coroner said that this was very similar to something of a car crash. Like, I don't think a human can create same havoc of a car crash.
Unless they had a car.
Right, that's true.
Doing the crashing.
So before
what about the burned body? Is there any explanation for the body that was burned?
Well, I mean, we're going to get to explanations
here.
They
didn't want to be a White Walker.
We're going to get to explanations here. But the thing is that before we dig deeper into this and actually try and make connections and try and sort of decipher for ourselves exactly what happened here, I want to know what you guys think actually happened. So do you guys have any ideas on what you guys think happened?
I have a feeling like the only thing, if we're talking logically, somebody like murdered them. Somebody came, like maybe like a secret organization or like something just came and some group of people must have come and found them and murdered them and were like, we're just going to kill these people. And they found brutal ways to kill them because maybe they're like some kind of military or secret military organization or something like that, that just plowed down four of them. And then the other two, they just decided, and then like two of them, they were like,
yeah, I'm going to go with a radioactive mistake beast.
I was going to say Yeti.
So close.
Yeah, close enough.
Close to mine, yeah.
But they did say no animal could have done this.
Yeah, not an animal that we know of.
A Yeti's not an animal.
I want to know.
It's a force of nature.
Do we know any more about like the radioactive clothing?
Well, we're gonna like get into that.
Just so far from like
it's radioactive.
We found there's clothes. It was radioactive.
Yeah, all right. So let's talk.
That's like the out piece for me. Yeah. So like for me, you could like here's a story you could say like I know that apparently when people freeze to death, just before they die, they feel like they're on fire and they have this urge to like take off all their clothes because their brain is like shutting down. And so that's a possible explanation for why these people are out in not enough clothes. You could argue that like these two dudes got in a fight and just fucking beat the shit out of each other and then died, and that the coroner just, you know, kind of like got it wrong and that maybe these were human injuries. I don't know why that guy was burned. It's weird that the branches were broken off so high up. Maybe there was a storm. I mean, but it is hard to explain away the radioactive clothing.
Yes, yes. Let me talk to you about a little bit about radioactivity. So in order to really like understand exactly like why things or like in order to really understand radioactivity, you kind of have to understand that almost everything is slightly radioactive.
Mm-hmm.
Anything below 5,000 disintegrations per minute is safe for humans.
And so like my understanding of radioactivity is like a complex atom is degrading into like a less complex atom, and it's like releasing energy as it's doing that, and that released energy is what's like harmful to us.
So out of the three articles of clothing, one was like exactly 5,000 disintegrations per minute. Another one was like 5,600 disintegrations per minute. And the other one was like 96,000 disintegrations per minute.
Wow. And was there one article of clothing found per group?
No.
Do you know about that, or if it was just...
So the articles of clothing were owned by two different people. And they are, I'm trying to pronounce a name here again, Kolevatov and Krishkoshenko.
And which groups were they in? Do you know? If you don't know, it's okay.
I believe that they were found... one of the Yuris is Krishkoshenko. So he was found as part of the first group. So he was part of the...
The burn in the tree.
The burn in the tree. Yeah. Limb. So he was there. And then the other one, I believe, was one of the people who sustained fatal injuries.
Okay. Yeah, I want to say the other two pieces were found in like the mutilated group.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were they like pants?
It was two shirts and a pant.
Were they male or female clothing?
Well, they were male.
Okay.
They were their clothing. They were wearing them.
Well, there were some females there. That's,
I mean,
that's
yeah, true. I didn't know who was who.
Yep. Sorry. They were male. They were wearing them. So let's get into some explanations here, because clearly there's what's really interesting about this conspiracy here is that there's a lot of information and there's a lot of like it's like pretty well investigated, because
well
they have, yeah, exactly, because they have a lot of information on it, and a lot of it kind of is just like, why don't they have an answer for this? Because there's just a lot of information.
Yeah, you've given us a like pretty thorough
exactly
timeline here.
Exactly.
And these facts are not easy to piece together.
It's true.
It's a weird one.
So, let's start with the first conspiracy theory on what people think happened here. Now, reports of three orbs of light above the mountain that they were scaling came in February 1st, 1959, many different people in the small town below, as well as some reports either before the night or after that night. Mm-hmm. So there were constantly some weird orbs of light in the sky. And so people that subscribe to this theory also claim that the bodies found were discolored and orange. Now, I haven't really found any evidence to support that. I haven't found any pictures.
They just decided that.
They
on their
just
own.
Decide like I don't know if they're looking at something that I'm not. It sounds like to me that they just got a spray tan, just like Mr. Trump before they went on the track.
You know, it's cheap. It's cheaper. You just go up the Dyatlov Pass. You just chill out. And the orbs come. You get a tan.
See,
then
the people,
you die.
The people who found them were just wearing like the snowboarder the goggles.
The
little
the
goggles.
Goggles. Protect your eyes. Yeah. From the, yeah. That's why they weren't wearing clothes. They're trying to get a good even tan.
Yeah.
So, and supposedly that night, we have an actual picture that one of the hikers took of UFOs. Now here's the picture. I have it on my phone. It looks like
wow, that's a real shitty picture.
That's obviously
for those of you
UFOs.
At home. This is a picture of a small white circle in blackness.
No, you took that.
Well,
that is
like
a picture
of
a small white circle.
Is that
in
that
blackness?
The moon? In
that
the
is
center?
A picture.
We
of
don't
a,
know what it is
of a okay. snowflake and
that
the
looks
tree
like
branch.
The moon in the center,
and it's
and
out
then
of focus.
The thing on the left is like this glowing white thing with smoke coming
no,
out.
No, that's
of it.
That's an out of focus tree branch, and then like a speck of dust.
They would
or
have
a
been
snowflake.
Shitty photography students.
Now, let me just explain the picture here, and we'll include it in our sources here.
I
but
just want everyone to realize this is not a convincing image.
It looks like it's a very out of focus, like white orb, and then there's like a white orb, and it looks like maybe smoke is coming off, like more out of focus white orbs. Now we don't know what it is, and I'm not saying that like I'm not trying to put words in what it actually is.
Let me ask you an important question before you do proceed. Did they have color photography at the time?
No.
So this is all
or
black
well,
and white.
Or well,
they
I don't know if I don't know if they actually did have color photography, but the hikers here did not have
okay.
color photography.
Okay.
They did not. Yeah, everything that they took is in black and white, and there are a lot of pictures here. I'll try and link to some galleries in the sources here, so you guys can take a look at that. But supposedly, this is supposed to be images of a UFO seen that night.
Yeah, totally.
And, Like, I can sort of see, but it kind of feels like they're reaching like a little bit.
The only way I would conclude that's UFOs if someone first told me that was a UFO and then put a gun to my head.
Yeah, do whatever you say.
Now, I think what's important here is that, this is right in the time, right in the middle of the Cold War. So, it does look like this is an image that somebody took at night. Now, and, like, I don't know what these orbs are, but other things that could potentially be are any sort of thing like rockets or anything from, like, the space race or anything like that.
Yep.
Like a meteor or anything like that falling from the sky, something like that.
Or just a tree branch.
Or a UFO.
Or just some exposed film.
It could be that, too. It could just be nothing. Like, I really don't know what it is trying to say, but a lot of the people who subscribe to this theory think that is clear evidence of a UFO.
Yeah.
Curtis is clearly not convinced.
Hey, I'm right there with you, buddy. And I'm all for aliens.
Like, there's a bunch of shit you can do with photography that looks like blurry and weird.
Yeah.
It's real easy to make blurry and weird shit.
Now,
It's not. Anyway, sorry.
These aren't the first people to have their lives claimed in this area. Nine hunters of the Mansi tribe actually had a similar thing happen relatively close to the time of this event. Around 1959. They were visited by some geologists. They came in contact with the Mansi, and they told them that that in this area, nine of their hunters had died, and it wasn't like an animal attack or anything. It was very unknown to their cause of death. Mm-hmm. So we have also some like really weird things, like, and it could just be that aliens came down and killed these people with some sort of death ray that doesn't leave human, I don't know,
pew, pew.
Human injuries. That's a thing that could happen. I don't know.
It was interesting that the deaths were in batches of nine.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
Batches of nine. So let's talk about the radioactive clothing, because that's also something that that those people really think is one of the bigger answers here as well.
Uh-huh.
So as I said, only three of the articles of clothing were above the safe amount of radioactivity.
But it's still like, that's pretty high radioactivity for clothes.
Well, yeah.
You know?
Three of them were above the safe.
Yeah. That's like, what I said
like
earlier.
They were unsafe. Like they were past. They were above into unsafeness.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like don't touch these.
Sorry. I like
now, Kolvatov, who owned two of the articles of clothing there. He previously worked at a factory developing nuclear materials. So that sounds like a pretty good explanation.
You know, I like that explanation a lot, actually.
So he just
that's a good explanation.
Nuclear
he worked
stuff.
At a place
and it just happened.
In Russia in the 50s where they dealt with nuclear shit.
And he just was radiating.
And he got radiated, and that stuff does last. I mean, Chernobyl is still like deradiating like years later or something. Mm-hmm. Like you still can't go there.
I mean, you can.
Or
you totally can. People do tours of it, but like you can't really live there.
Yeah,
you can visit.
It's not okay. And like the main, what's called the elephant's foot, like the main, radioactive source is still very dangerous.
And yes,
you can't be in the same room with it, or you will die. You'll receive a lethal amount of radiation within minutes. So these things, like radiation, takes a long time to get out.
Yep. Krivonchenko. He had also previously worked in a top-secret plutonium plant for nuclear weapons. So that all feels pretty... Yep.
This was going to be
my
question was like, do these guys have another reason for having radioactive clothes?
Yep. So that sort of explains that. And that's sort of all the information with like the alien explanation there. It doesn't really have a lot of credibility. I definitely don't subscribe to it because there's a lot of holes.
Yep.
Like plus, a lot of holes.
Plus you said that's a lot of that's the radiation threat like above the threshold.
Yeah.
The safety threshold.
Well,
so
yeah.
It doesn't make sense for them to be working in these places near radiated materials and then they're okay, and then they're dead.
Well, how it doesn't immediately kill you. So like you, the dangerous levels, basically like a dangerous amount of radiation will predispose you to, like I mentioned earlier, being in that room with the elephant's foot, which is just a big, like, pile of fucking plutonium that's really radioactive. You could sit in that room for like 2 minutes and then leave, and then you'd get cancer and die. Like, it wouldn't kill you instantly. Yeah. And it doesn't kill you instantly is what I'm trying to say. It, like, they might have been exposed to unsafe levels, and they might have had a shortened lifespan because of that. Mm-hmm. But it's very feasible that they could have, you know, been walking around with radioactive pants.
Yep.
And you know, lived a couple more years to also, die in the
yeah,
woods.
Yeah, think about the time period.
Yeah,
like,
safety standards of the time. Yeah, just like, especially during the Cold War, it's like, you got to get it done.
Yep.
Like, we're not going to worry quite as much about
and,
your
and
safety.
And it wasn't, you know, it maybe wasn't even known as much about
yeah.
radiation.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Like, for instance, lead was a common material used around this time, and people weren't even... didn't know that was that dangerous.
I mean, so. The Romans made lead water pipes, so that worked out well for them.
Yep.
We don't have a history with materials that's really, like, super positive. We're like, hey, it works.
Hey, this is good.
This can't possibly
good.
Be wrong.
Okay, oops. That was bad. It's fun to try to imagine what's going to be next.
Yep.
All right, so...
microphones.
It's plastic.
Oh.
So...
their electromagnetic field is poisoning us.
Probably.
The next... the next idea, I mean, because basically now at this point, we're just trying to explain exactly what happened and why we think it happened and how we think it happened, I guess, is a better idea there or better word. So let's say maybe an avalanche happened.
Okay.
Now, American author Benjamin Radford suggests, and I quote, that the group woke up in a panic, cut their way out of their tent, either because an avalanche had covered the entrance of their tent or because they were scared an avalanche was imminent. Better to have potentially repairable slit in your tent than risk buried alive under tons of snow. They were poorly clothed because they had been sleeping and ran to safety of the nearby woods where the trees would help slow the oncoming snow. In the darkness of the night, they got separated into two or three groups. One group made a fire, hence the burned hands, while the others tried to return to the tent and recover their clothing, since the danger had apparently passed. But it was too cold, and they froze to death before they could locate their tent in the darkness.
They had been drinking.
Yeah.
So they weren't that coordinated.
Exactly. At some point, some of their clothes had been recovered or swapped from the dead, but at any rate, the group of four whose bodies were most severely damaged were caught in an avalanche and buried 13 feet, buried under 13 feet of snow, more than enough to account for compelling natural force, the medical examiner described.
Mm-hmm.
Dubina's tongue was likely removed by scavengers or ordinary predation.
Yeah, like wolves. Yeah. Coyotes. Not coyotes. Yeah. It's not fucking coyotes in Russia.
What about the
there's
eyes?
Wolves, though.
Yeah, some fucking thing came and ate them.
Yeah.
Birds, vultures.
So that's the idea there. Now, there are a couple holes in this theory
as
well. I
gotta say, I like this theory a lot, though.
Yeah, this is the most straightforward.
Well, and while you're at it, we're talking about holes, like, I'm sure you'll bring it up, but, like, the guy who had his hands burned, like, I'm sure they started a fire, but how does it make sense for his hands to get burned by the fire unless
he
falls
to,
into the fire?
Well,
That's the idea that he fell into the fire?
So here's the deal, Sakeef. He's fucking cold. He doesn't have any clothes on. He's trying to start a fire in the middle of, like, a negative 30 degrees Celsius. He's starting to die. Like, as soon as you walk outside naked and it's this cold, you're immediately starting to die. Okay, so he's, like, motor functions are shutting down, and like he's trying to start a fire. Maybe he starts a fire. Okay, fine, he could do that. I believe it. But like, I also believe that he could have burned himself and then just died because he got too cold and the fire wasn't enough to keep him warm.
Yep, he was also inebriated because he was drinking earlier, right?
No, were those guys also? Those guys also drunk?
There was fire group, there was drunk group,
and there was
horribly injured group.
But still, like, you're not thinking straight when you're freezing
to
death.
And I buy it that, like, an avalanche came. They had to cut their way out of the tent. This would also explain the broken tree branches, like, high up.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It explains, well, the intense, like, damage those bodies took because that much snow would fuck you up a lot. Mm-hmm. I buy the predators eating tongues and eyes things. Yep.
See, the only issue I have with that is that they found them under what is apparently the avalanche that killed them. So the predation's out of order.
Well, like, were any parts of them sticking up, or
they fell into a ravine. Okay. So there were like some parts that were open to the elements.
Okay, so it's feasible. It's feasible.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. It's just less. It depends on exactly how they were placed.
So this theory also has a couple holes here. The area didn't suggest any obvious signs of an avalanche taking place, like after they'd gone up and looked.
Okay.
Like, it was not clear that an avalanche had taken place, especially because we can see their footprints.
Yeah.
That we saw their footprints.
Like, I like the idea that avalanche happened. They had to cut their way out of the tent. And that's when they created the footprints. And there wasn't footprints going the other way, right? Where the other people were found.
There were footprints all around the thing, but the main footprints were there,
leading away to the one group where he was burned. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that like those people could have got caught in the avalanche.
Mm-hmm. Now, avalanches weren't common in this area, or to ever happen in over 100 expeditions in this area.
That's relevant.
So, and moreover, Dyatlov was an experienced skier, and Zolotarev was studying for his master's certificate in ski instruction and mountain hiking, a degree you can only get in Russia, apparently. That's not actually true. You can get it elsewhere, but... neither man would camp in a place where an avalanche would or could happen. So, like, they were very experienced with this. And, like, as I said earlier, all of these people were very experienced in these type of treks.
Right, but they were by a mountain. Yeah,
they were by a mountain.
Yeah, this is not Little Timmy's first adventure, though. Like,
yeah,
they've all but been through some stuff.
It's somewhat within the realm of possibility that an avalanche could have occurred.
True. It is in the realm of possibility.
It's just unlikely is all.
They weren't on just a flat plane.
Yo, that'd be incredible. What happened?
But that's relevant to note that avalanches weren't common in that area.
Yep. So that's, I guess, so far, like, the most credible idea there. Now let's talk about some interesting creatures here.
Yeah.
Are we talking about a Yeti? Because I think it was a Yeti.
There's a speculation of a Russian Yeti.
Yo!
Or Menk. Menk being, in Manzi folklore, a Menk is described as a forest giant.
Yes.
Basically just a Russian Yeti.
I know about these things.
I love this one.
And this idea really comes from the whole idea that these injuries couldn't be sustained by a man.
Mm-hmm.
So... no such evidence actually exists stating that any of this is real.
Which makes it very real.
All the better.
Another reason why this sort of idea exists, why this cryptozoology creature exists, stems from like the missing eyeballs and tongue thing.
So this giant just like knelt down and like sucked out their eyeballs?
Dude, Yeti gotta eat.
Yeti's gotta eat. I think a more plausible theory is probably that a bear committed the crime and that a bear scared them out of the tent. They escaped. Either the people in the forest tried to climb the tree or the bear tried to climb the tree. Regardless, I feel like the bear is a more plausible.
Yeah, but wouldn't they have found bear tracks?
They found people tracks.
Yeah, that is, they can find people tracks, and they can find bear tracks. They can find Yeti tracks.
Well, I mean,
they can find anything.
Yetis can fly, bro. They can't.
I mean, that is true.
Yetis are incredibly stealthy.
They did. What I think is weird is that, like, several months or like 26 days pass, and they don't find anything. And then 26 days pass, and they find this track still in the. Still in the snow, like.
I mean, if it was really cold and there had been no more snow, I don't see why they wouldn't have just been preserved.
Mm-hmm. So that's. I really couldn't find much evidence with the Russian Yeti, but that's just something that people believe.
That's my favorite one.
Yeah, and why didn't he fuck up everybody? The other guys just like died.
No, the other guys got away. Cold.
Yeah, but like
they split into three groups, and he had to pick a group. He just went with one.
There's another theory that suggests that they might have been killed by the Mansi natives in the area. They potentially got protective of their land or something, and maybe killed the group. The issue is that there's no real evidence of that.
Mm-hmm. The most terrifying monster is man himself.
Right, because they didn't have any like injuries from external weaponry. Exactly. Like that.
And again, you've stated the injuries couldn't be caused by humans.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, that's possible. That's what this one coroner said.
Right. Of
but
course.
This was also like, this was the 60s, right?
1959.
Yeah. Almost. Yeah. You're close, Joe.
Is it possible these guys fell into that ravine?
That is an idea.
And that
there.
Could be a very compelling force that killed them.
Gravity.
Yeah. And then.
Couldn't gravity do more than a man?
You know, something. Freaked everybody out. They all got out of the tent.
I mean, the thing is that
people
like
fell down.
They could have fallen, but that doesn't really describe the snow.
Because they were like underneath snow.
They were underneath snow.
Well,
so
yeah, I guess.
Well, but if they fell off into the ravine, then snow could have fallen over on them too.
I mean,
right?
That's true.
Or it could have just like snowed on them.
But
the tracks. You're right.
But the Yeti was saving them for later.
That's true.
Anyway, so this is probably my favorite theory.
It's not the Yeti.
So let's talk about the time that we're in. This amidst the Cold War. The U.S. and the Soviet Union were quickly both trying to get nuclear weapons. Spying on the enemy was huge during this as well. Stalin's police force would follow any foreigners that came into the country very, very closely, trying to, you know, keep tabs on them, seeing why they're in the Soviet Union. So the best way that the United States felt to get information on the Soviets, basically how far they're progressing in the battle, is to rely on Soviet nationals to gain information. Now, Alexei Rakitin, author of The Dyatlov Pass, talks about how members of the Trek may have been members of the KGB.
Ooh.
So their plot was to go into the Ural Mountains and uncover a cell of CIA agents. They were going to deliver false radioactive samples and then photograph the Americans. Theoretically, something went wrong and the Americans killed them. Now let's dig a bit deeper, though. According to this theory, the Dyatlov group was made up of mostly citizens, and only Koletvatov, Krish, basically the people I've talked about earlier. There's three of them. Most likely being KGB agents because they had attachments to these like factories because you had... two of them being part of top secret nuclear bomb factories. And Zolotarov was actually part of the NKVD.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
What's the NKVD?
It's like the leading Soviet secret police organization, reporting directly to Joseph Stalin.
Yeah, they were active during World War II. They were brutal.
Yeah. Wow. So he had worked for them previously. And it is suspected that none of the others actually knew about the Trek's intentions. When the bodies were found, apparently there is gray foam coming out of Doroshenko's face, a diary missing, and a camera as well missing. So that's just information that we don't have.
Huh.
Apparently also in, Zolotarov, he has this weird tattoo, spelling out the name, Daermmuazuaya, which to this date is untranslatable.
That was Russian for mom.
And as I said earlier, he was added to the Trek last minute. So he quickly, yeah.
Huh. Yeah, that is interesting.
Which is, kind of weird. And as stated above, Kolotov worked for a nuclear factory that only go like the name of the factory. The only like written information is a P.O. box number 3394.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Krishkoshenko worked for a similar company with a similar name. So that's kind of weird.
3394.
Yeah. So that's kind of weird. I could sort of see how that working.
Oh yeah. Because they were, yeah. I mean, at this time, there was the spy game was at its height.
Oh, it was. Yep. Like this is, yeah. And like it is suspected that the only place that the Americans were able to actually trade information was up in Siberia.
Yeah, like because super it was, remote places.
Exactly,
yeah.
Super remote, where it's not really, like, there's no civilization there.
Yep, yep.
So that's sort of the idea. Now, another theory is that they actually stumbled on, instead of them being part of the KGB, they actually just stumbled upon the KGB up in the mountains. Now, they've been using various sites to test rockets and other weapons, because you got to go somewhere to test this stuff.
Usually far away from people.
Specifically, the R-12 rockets, which they adopted in March of that year. Supposedly, Dyatlov group stumbles onto that site, and they must be terminated. This could also potentially give credence to the picture that we looked at earlier, with the out-of-focus lights. Those could potentially be rockets that we saw in the sky. It would also bring credence to the lights that other people saw earlier, like before the trek, during the trek, and then after the trek.
Like the lake villagers.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the idea there.
Though, honestly, nothing gives credence to that photograph.
So those are some theories there. And while researching this, there have been a lot of people who've done research into this topic. And I was watching this YouTube video, and I'll link to it on our website. But I think that his theory asks the real questions and really kind of comes to a really solid conclusion here. And this is what I think happened. It is the most logical, is the least far-fetched out of anything we've talked about so far.
So the least fun.
So the least fun, exactly. Which is why I kind of saved it for last, because, I don't know, least
fun. I'm prepared for it to be my favorite.
yeah, Curtis is very on board with whatever you're about to say.
So
this YouTuber is called Lamino. So
good old Lamino.
Good old Lamino. So questions that he prompts in his video is, I mean, and this is the big question. Why would they leave the tent?
Right. That is like, a big question.
Because like that's the like
something needs to drive them all out of the tent.
Exactly.
Yeah, especially to cut their way out of the tent.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he comes to the logical conclusion of there is potentially an immediate threat inside the tent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because as I said earlier, the footprints outside are shallow and don't detail the group leaving in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
So most likely there's a threat of something inside the tent.
They figured out the pants were radioactive.
There was a really big wasp.
So in the pictures taken, we see that Dyatlov himself created a stove that could be used inside the tent, having an exhaust pipe that pops outside the tent.
Mm.
We know they used the stove that night because they cooked ham and bacon. Because we found that inside the tent. Based on this theory, the exhaust pipe was potentially removed after they were done cooking, and somehow the embers got reignited, thus causing the tent to fill up with smoke.
Yep.
Now, this would cause people to cut slits.
You'd freak out and you'd want to leave the tent.
This would cause people to cut slits in the tent, trying to make it so that the smoke would escape, and eventually cutting holes large enough for them to actually escape from the tent. Now, why would they leave the tent at that point? Well, they could potentially believe that there was still a fire at the tent or something, or basically that like all their stuff was gone at that point. So this would also give credence to why they were in less than ideal clothing outside of the tent. Mm-hmm. And once again, this also gives basically says why some of them had signs of being burned.
Yep.
Because of the fire and whatnot. Now, some of the hikers were found with blood around their mouths. And coughing up blood is a symptom of smoke inhalation. Mm. So now they're all outside. And either there's too much smoke there, or, as I said, they think it's on fire. And they know they're in a bad situation. So they head off to the nearest shelter, the forest. Now, the forest is actually kind of far from where they are. So they quickly make it to the forest. And they potentially gather wood. Potentially climb the tree to gather more wood.
Breaking off branches.
Exactly. Breaking off branches. Now, some of the more dressed hikers head deeper, trying to either head back to find more wood or find more whatever, trying to head back, maybe back to civilization or something, because they're in a pretty bad situation. About 75 meters further, they trigger a minor avalanche and fall into a small ravine, causing lethal injuries. Mm-hmm. Three of the hikers still around the fire head back to the tent, potentially to gather more supplies, and they all slowly freeze to death.
Because they're drunk, too.
Because they're drunk.
And because they were drinking when they were in the tent, because they're having a good time.
Yep.
And when you're drinking, you actually you feel warmer, but you actually are more susceptible to hypothermia.
Yeah, it's not a good time to be cold.
But what about the dude who had the burned hands?
The stove.
Messing with the stove.
Okay, so what about the condition of the tent when they found it? You said they found the tent with holes in it. Was that it? Was there any more clarification?
Holes cut from the inside.
They didn't clarify if there were signs of the tent being burned in any way.
They did not.
Did they find the rest of their belongings in the tent?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that was one of the weird things about it, was that they just left.
Yeah.
Yeah, they kind of had to leave the tent in a hurry.
Well, basically, like, the idea there that he is suggesting is that they either still thought the tent was on fire, and so they left.
Which is a normal reaction to...
But it, you know, also could potentially not be on fire, and that it could have just been full of smoke. And at that point, they like couldn't stay there because of the threat of smoke inhalation.
Mm-hmm. I probably would have waited around the tent.
Yeah.
Like, you're not these guys, Joe.
Yeah, I, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, they're drunk, and so they make bad decisions. And
well, not all of them were drunk.
They go, well, enough of them are drunk.
Mm-hmm.
That they just
let's
wander
go
off.
Forest.
I really buy the, like, the people who are drunk, I really buy the they got drunk, wandered off in the woods, and died. Because that just happens to people.
Yeah.
When they're out in the cold camping, people will just drink too much and just be like, I'm fucking drunk, and they wander off into the woods because they're like, this is fucking awesome nature, and then they just die.
And then they just climb
found
trees.
The next day just dead.
Yep.
And that's not uncommon.
Yep.
They just climb trees, break branches and shit, fucking, mm-hmm. Yep.
So,
and I buy that these dudes fell into a ravine, too.
Mm-hmm. So at this point, and basically the whole thing with the eyes and the tongue is basically, at that point, described by scavengers.
Yeah, foxes and whatnot.
Yeah.
That's sort of the idea there. It is a really weird case, and it is still officially unsolved to this day.
That's cool.
And we don't actually know what happened. Because, you know, we don't have any eyewitnesses, so it's pretty weird. Yuri, the guy who got sick, probably is pretty happy about that.
Having a good time.
Because he lived to, like, the ripe age of, like, 75 and then died.
That's pretty good.
He probably also freaked out when he heard his friends all died.
Well, that too, but...
But did he ever... Did he return? Do you know anything more about, like, was he a part of the investigation
party? He didn't return, but I want to say that he, like, created, like a fund or something.
He made a hashtag for it.
Yeah, something like that.
I know there's a memorial at the base of the mountain, I think, with all their names.
Yep.
Yeah.
All the really difficult...
All the really long...
Really huge fucking names. Memorial, like 9 miles long.
I think I think that last theory is definitely the most
logical,
supported.
Yeah. I really like the KGB one, though. I kind of hope that's true.
I like the KGB one.
I kind of feel like that's just like some American was like, Russia in 1959, it must have been about the Cold War, despite the fact that Russia is an enormously huge section of land, like the biggest country on Earth. And these were just some kids. I think they were just some kids taking a hike.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm on board with you, Brennan, with your favorite one, but I really just want the Yeti one to be
but
true.
Like, right? Like,
I really
them being hunted
one.
By the terrifying forest giant?
There's just not enough information.
I know there's not.
There is a whole, I think, History Channel, or no, it's a Discovery Channel documentary about the Russian Yeti, and it talks about this. I couldn't find a way to watch it online.
Oh, man.
But
the knockoff History Channel, the Discovery Channel.
But the reviews of it are like there's hardly enough fact in this.
Yeah.
Like, it's all just like full of like,
what
I'm
this?
Inferring this.
But Yetis are just so cool, but I'm on board with you. I'm pretty sure the last theory is the right theory.
But spooky forest giant.
But spooky forest giant.
Yeah. I think the UFO theory is my favorite coolest theory.
That's fair.
You love that picture so much. You're just like raving
so
about it.
Convincing.
Yeah. It's
what
clear
about,
as
what
day.
About you, Sakeef?
Clear as day.
Not sure. I'm always gonna go with the more realistic one. I think the last one makes sense that they
and like the last one brings the the avalanche theory into it too.
Yeah.
Like the whole minor avalanche, and you know, if you're like panicking, you're gonna be less careful. And, you know, you could walk and trigger a minor avalanche.
Yeah, and especially, too, because, like, it seems like this happened at night.
It did happen at night.
Yeah, so it's like, they're out in the middle of nowhere,
yep,
functionally.
Yeah, just freaking out.
And yeah.
Nine people freaking out in the middle of nowhere would be, like, four of them go off one way, two of them go off one way, three of them go off the other way. That's how it would probably happen.
Mm-hmm. This rarely ends well.
And they just die in the
woods. It's really interesting, though. I mean, because this is, like, as I said, still entirely unsolved. So it's like, it's one of the biggest cold cases.
It's fun to speculate
there.
About.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
This has made me uncomfortable. Like, my stomach feels sick.
Really?
Yeah. But I always
that's
get sick
called
from
Yeti
this kind
fear.
Of stuff.
You get queasy easy, though.
I do get queasy because I start thinking it. Yeah. Like, I start imagining it in my head when I hear these.
Just think it's
like
a fun-loving Yeti that just,
just
murdered
wants to
doesn't realize his doesn't own strength.
It, doesn't make it
just
any.
Wants to hug.
He just wants a hug.
The only loose link for me was the radioactive pants, and then that got explained.
And there's an explanation for it.
That was it. Now it's over for me. Like, but, like, yeah, it's mysterious. It's weird, and it's intriguing to wonder, like, what happened to these fucking people out in the woods that, you know, ostensibly knew what they were doing. But then again, like, you know, experts in all kinds of fields will tell you that even experts can succumb to, you know, rookie mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's true.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter how trained you are in being outside, the cold will still murder you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't care how intelligent you are.
Right.
If you're still out there just alone and it's dark and it's freezing and you're not prepared for it, it doesn't
and
care
even
if
you
went to school for it.
Even if you're like, man, I know it's too cold and it will probably kill me, and then it does.
And like, it does. It's like, yeah, hey, dog, you were right. I did kill you.
Imagine if there were more than nine people. How do you think this would have turned out?
There would have been that
be,
many more
be
extra 13
bodies. People dead instead.
Like, think about what if it were like 50 people on this trip.
50 people?
That'd be
well, 50 people.
But
well, if there were 50 people on this trek, well, what happened is that if there was an issue in one of the tents,
no, it's one tent.
Don't fit in one tent.
It's a big tent.
It's called
a
yurt.
50 people also wouldn't be on this, like, whatever.
I know,
but
like, let's just fantasize.
It's
about
a traveling
it a
circus going up the mountain.
Yes,
they have those in Russia
to meet
the
Americans.
Well,
they also
well,
have bears on tiny
more
little unicycles.
Maybe like 20-25 people.
That's still a lot of people.
Like 15
like,
people
like
is realistic.
Okay, so what? It's a lot of people. So what?
It's a lot of
so
people.
So they all die,
too. Do
you think
it would have changed any? If
yeah, it
would have
been
people.
Different if the situation was different. Yes.
Different variables make different things happen.
Yeah, but like, do you guys think
so
they
would have
still would have died or that they...
I don't think so,
because chances are 25 people can't fit in a single tent. Therefore, if something goes wrong in one of the tents, everyone, hey, let's make this happen. Everyone pile into the other tent.
Be sure to grab your clothes and your things before you leave.
Like, I think it turns out to be a happy ending.
Like, maybe some people die.
Yeah.
But not all of them.
Because it's still Russia.
Well, it's also still, like, less than 1 degrees.
Yeah.
I mean, so. And really the idea is that what theory do you subscribe to? Because if it's the KGB testing, you know, massive rockets, then chances are they're all still dead.
Yeah.
I don't think 25 people can take a Yeti
massive
either.
Rockets yeah, that cause them to die of hypothermia.
Yeti yeah. still wins
yeah,
that
Yeti
fight.
Yeti fuck people
well,
up.
I mean, like the idea is that, like, they probably basically just, like, kept them outside and being, like, standing over them and say, hey, you're going to freeze to death right now or something. I don't know.
No, please.
they have a movie. They love
is
pass.
It spooky?
I think it's called The Devil's Pass.
Oh, it totally is. I've heard of that one. Yeah.
We should watch it.
We should definitely watch The Devil's Pass.
There's a lot of movies we need to watch.
The directors took a lot of liberties, so it's not as similar, and, like, some of the names are really screwed up.
Like, do people actually survive in The Devil's Pass?
I don't know. I've never seen it.
I want to say The Devil's Pass, definitely. Joe, I think you'd enjoy it, from what I've heard of it.
Really? Why is that?
Because it goes off of the theory that you and me enjoy.
Oh! Yeah!
But,
I'm down.
Yeah, I mean that's the Dyatlov Pass.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That was fascinating.
Way to bring us down with a lot of deaths.
You're welcome. That's what I'm here for.
It was only 9.
My stomach
it was 18 actually.
Yeah.
Don't forget the hunters.
Don't forget the hunters.
The Manseys.
The Manseys, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I'm always down to talk about the Dyatlov Pass.
It's such a weird story.
It really is.
It is, yeah.
It's a very specific thing to be down to talk about always.
Yo, it's
like
a
you're
cool
at a funeral
story.
Or like you're at a water park and someone just like
dude, if somebody wants to just throw down like Dyatlov Pass theories at the water park, like hit me up.
To our listeners.
What the fuck are you talking about?
I don't know, dude. I'm really tired.
To our listeners, share with us what your favorite of
where
this,
would you talk to
Anderson
about this? Yeah.
Hit me up. Like, you wanted to, like, we could just be in
at a bar,
we could
in
just
the
be,
forest, on
we're
the
just
street,
in the Louvre,
on a boat.
Like, if you want to get paintings. On Tinder and just,
yeah, no, like, if you want to just, like, if that's how you start your conversation on Tinder,
that's
I'm
your,
down.
Like, Tinder description. Talk to me about the dialogue.
Oh, man. I have to try that.
You get like one person adds you.
And they're very, and they have
like,
a very specific
soulmate.
Soulmate acquired.
It just
turns
some
out,
big
turns
Russian
out it was me.
Blonde woman.
I sent the
it's
message.
You. Oh man, yeah, that was good. That was a good,
very interesting.
Good talky wordy
I liked
time.
It a lot.
Yeah. Thanks guys for listening. We appreciate your listenership every week. You can find us. Anywhere you can find podcasts, that's like Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, whatever, SoundCloud, you know, do it.
We're on multiple social medias, Twitter, Facebook, we have a website, Mulder was right.
.wordpress.com.
I always want to say at wordpress.com.
On social media at MWRcast. Yep.
You can email us at MulderWasRightCast@gmail.com.
If you like the music,
Christian Totino
pizza roll.
Christian Tostito.
Christian Totino.
Christian Tortellini.
Yeah.
Did the
Christian SoundCloud.
He's a wild guy.
He did the music.
Curtis made the music.
I didn't.
Okay. Curtis. Thanks, guys, for listening. We will see you next week where we're going to talk about something entirely unrelated.
Wake up, sheeple. What in the hell happened?